Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Comedy Film Nerds Podcast, episode 366. I'm Graham Elwood.
I'm Chris Mancini. It's a lot of episodes.
It's a lot.
365 was a lot, but 366, I feel like it's a tipping point.
It is a tipping point. We've done 50-some spoilers, so we're in the four-somethings.
Yeah, easily over four.
Easy. Mm. Easily.
We got a lot to talk about.
We do have a lot to talk about.
We're going to do Fate of the Furious, Power Rangers again, Colossal. There's a lot of movie talk coming your way.
I believe there was a little, some sort of Star Space trailer.
Star Space trailer?
Some kind of space creatures trailer.
Some Trekkie Wars thing?
Some Trekkie Wars, yeah. There was some sort of space Trek or something that came out. I believe we're going to discuss
about
that.
A bit of a tease.
A little bit of a tease from a Jedi. Mm-hmm. A movie about a riot.
Yes.
We're going to talk about. And we also want to thank everybody for the Patreon. You guys have been jumping in on that, which has been fantastic. Just to let you know how Patreon works. So everyone, you'll get billed at the first of the month. So all of you that joined in March, you were billed April 1st. And those who are joining in April, you get billed May 1st. So this month, the month that you won't get your card charged, and you won't get your access to your bonus stuff until the following month, until after your card is charged.
Now, however, the exception to that is, don't you get access to the feed right away?
Like, yes, you do get access to the feed right away. So we've been doing the patron only posts. We've been doing the polls and everything. Since we're going to talk about Colossal today, there's a Colossal poll on there.
Yes. And maybe today we'll do Best Fast and the Furious movie.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that poll on the Patreon page. Mm-hmm. There's been 8 of them, and they're all fantastic. And
you're forgetting about the first few.
Oh, they were great, Chris. we're going to discuss whether, you know, the importance of family.
It's very important.
It's very important. And also,
it's not something you should turn your back on.
No, no. And you'll get, and also the bonus podcast we're going to release this month. That'll come out probably in about a week.
We're recording it this evening
with Neil T. Weekly. So there's a lot of cool stuff happening. And
the monthly weekly film news.
we need a longer, more cumbersome
name.
Yes, it's the... Yeah. The biannual, weekly, monthly news.
Perfect.
Perfect. Yeah. On the hour, every hour.
Yeah.
So let us introduce our guest, another first-time guest.
Mm-hmm.
This gentleman runs one of my favorite stand-up shows. It's also become a TV thing. He'll explain it in more detail, The Set List. And he's going to tell us he's been a full-time photographer, and he's got a little filmmaking background. Ladies and gentlemen, Troy Conrad.
Thanks. Good to be with you guys.
Yeah. Thanks for being on the show, man.
Yeah.
So tell us about, I know Set List. I love it. It's one of my favorite shows to do. Explain
nice.
To people who don't know.
Okay. Yeah. So Set List is a show where you walk up on stage. You, the comic, walk up on stage. You get a set list you've never seen. And it's nonsense, weird stuff. Not like, hey, airplane food.
No,
whatever.
it's like a cat disco or something. And you're
crab dynamics. Like, what does that mean, right? it's all meaningless stuff. And then we get to see what the comic makes that into. So it's usually like, you know, 4 or 5 topics. They go up on the screen one at a time, right behind the comic. So literally, the performer sees the topic at the same time the audience does. Mm-hmm. So you're just. You're winging it with 0 seconds to prepare. Not like, oh, you get like 30 seconds to prepare. Like 0 seconds.
No, I love it.
All instinct.
I've done it 2 or 3 mm-hmm. times, I think. And the last time was at Meltdown.
Yeah.
And I just love it. You just turn over your shoulder and it's like, okay. And
then this is what we're talking about.
And I love the premise that everyone plays along with. You do it as though
yes.
I've been doing crab dynamics. This is my crab dynamics bit.
Yeah, for 10 years you've been doing it on cruise ships, colleges around the country.
Yeah,
and you're bored with it by now.
Yeah.
Like that. If you embrace that premise, it changes the entire way the game is played because now it's not what can I think of on like that's a backwards way of doing it.
Right.
But if it's like oh I've been doing this forever, let me tell you guys. Then you just dive in, and you're a commitment guy. Like, you just dive fully in, and it's really fun to watch that.
I'm telling you, it's one of my most favorite stand-up shows to do. I mean, obviously, there's great stand-up shows, and, oh, they always get a good audience, or it's cool. But the fact that you've been doing this, how many years now?
September, October will be year seven.
Mm-hmm. So you've built up a following the majority of the audience has seen these before and loves it. And then there's a handful of people who have probably heard about it. So you have this audience that's just like sitting there wide-eyed at the edge of their seat, like, oh, what are they going to do?
Yeah.
And I love it. And I loved watching the other comics, like how they were going to commit to it. Like,
yeah.
The show I think I did was with Todd Glass.
Oh, right, right.
So he does it and Todd Glass style.
Yes. Todd actually finds, he's unique in that he finds a way to not do the show very creatively every time. Like, so the last time he did it, he had a guy, he had Cody running sound effects. And he was pretending, you know, he was pretending it was his act, but he was like doing silly punch, like, hey, that's a, what about that? And he was just all these sound effects. And he was still doing the show, but not doing the show. And it was amazing. So every time he does that,
it's fantastic. Like, and only Todd Glass could get away with that. Anyone, any other comic, you'd be like, dude, you're not playing along.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you'd
exactly.
be like, you can't do the show anymore.
Literally, there's zero people who can do that.
Yes.
Except for Todd.
Just,
yes. It's so true.
Who can do it in such a way that. It's such a fine line of him, like, if you didn't know Todd and if he wasn't so skilled at doing that, you'd be like, oh, this guy's just trying to blow up my show. He's being a dick.
Right, right,
he's
right,
not
right.
Playing, he's trying to blow. He doesn't want to, ooh, he's a comic who won't play
he's
along.
Too
fuck
cool.
you then.
Yeah.
You're not doing the show.
Right, right, right.
But Todd, you want to watch
oh, his so engaging.
Insane brain
yes.
work.
Yeah, and it's pure Todd.
It's pure
like,
Todd.
And that's one of the things about the show is it does tend to bring out, like, the personality of the comic. Like, you really see the point of view of every comic because it's just them and instinct, you know? It's,
right.
It's like golf, you versus the course instead of you versus another team or a thing. Like it's just you up there. Like, with group improv, you got somebody to save you. And the better you get at improv, the better people you're working with and the better they're at, you know,
right.
they're better at saving you. But with this, it's just you out there. So it's so, you feel it, you know, it's solo. You feel that pit in your stomach.
It's great. And the crowd is pretty forgiving, but.
How many topics is it, like, per comic?
Usually, like, four or five topics a comic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unless you're Greg Proops, which he goes, like, he does, like, these amazing, or Emo Phillips, too, one-liners, where it's just, like, he might get 15 in the same amount of time everyone else does five. I think one time we gave Proops, like, 22 topics.
Oh, my God.
And it's like these insane one-liners where you go, oh my God, that's worthy of, like, you spent a year writing that. Like, and Emo is very similar in that way. Like, he just looks at it for 2 seconds and he comes up with this line. You go, oh my God. Emo Phillips, one time we gave him, his topic was Tom Jonestown. Mm-hmm. Okay. And he, if I remember this, he looked at it and then he looked out at the audience and he said, you know, it's, something like, it's great to have a way to get rid of your groupies. Something like that. I was like, how did you do that,
wow.
dude? How did you do that? And I'm not even doing it justice. Like, it was even better than what I'm saying.
Wow.
But it was something like, it was incredible.
And so now it's become a TV show? Or
It was a TV show in 2012 in the UK and Australia. And it went into reruns in Australia. And we were on after Boardwalk Empire. It's like their HBO, Sky Atlantic.
Right.
So basically, Rupert Murdoch bought it, and then his distribution company brought it over to Australia. And we do like 2 months a year of live shows in Australia,
wow.
And then we have a run at the Soho Theatre in London coming up. So it's still, you know, it's still
now. When you do that, are you just doing local comics, or do some people come over from the States?
No, it's London. It's like big name London comics doing
right.
it. Yeah, like you remember Rich Hall?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Sniglets.
Sniglets. Mm-hmm. I love Rich Hall. And so he tries to do every show. Mm-hmm. But it's, and he's, by the way, huge in the UK, like massive
really?
Celebrity.
Did he move over there?
He moved there like probably 30 years ago, 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And he doesn't ever perform in the States. He has a house in Montana, comes in the summer. Mm-hmm. And then goes back there and works and sells out. You know, he's a guy that sells out like 5,000 seat places in a week. Yeah.
So Troy, now also you said you have a filmmaking background too.
Yeah. So I made when I came out here, I started making shorts and I did a bunch of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I made a film with Eddie Pepitone. I directed and produced a film called Runyon Just Above Sunset. Mm-hmm. And it's Eddie Pepitone.
It's about the park.
it's
a hiking film.
It's actually Eddie trying to climb Runyon Canyon to get to the chair as if it's Mount Everest. So it takes him 5 days. He has an expedition leader, Jimmeril. Mm-hmm. Let's see, his Sherpa. He has a Sherpa that was Paul Kozlowski, played a Sherpa. He had 100 pounds of gear, and we shot this as like a 5-episode series, and then Funny or Die picked it up, and it became really great. Then we put it together as like a half hour film, mm-hmm. and we submitted it to 2 film festivals, and it got into both, and it won at both. So we were super psyched. It got into Mockfest, because it's a mockumentary.
Right.
It won best short, and Eddie won best actor. And then we did the Burbank International Film Festival, and Eddie, let's see, I think, yeah, won best short.
Oh, that's great. That.
So it was a blast to work on, but Eddie is just so easy. I think you could just follow him around and you'd have a movie.
Oh, like, yeah.
But him
like
just,
the Bitter Buddha.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But you could make that movie again and again because
right.
he's just
amazing.
He's a muse for everybody, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Eddie's one of those guys, whenever I see him, I laugh and I riff, and like he's
unbelievable.
He's a very unique. He's probably pretty good at set lists, I would imagine.
Oh, he's incredible. He did the TV show.
Oh,
he did
really?
The same episode Robin Williams was on, and Robin wanted him on it. And like sat in the back just laughing and laughing at Eddie.
Great.
Like just loves Eddie. Wanted him around him all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So all right, well, let's get into some movies. We got to talk about Fate of the Furious.
Oh my
wow.
God.
This movie was exactly what you thought it was going to be.
There
was no buyer's remorse for this movie.
It is the comedy of the year. This is the best comedy that's been released thus far in 2017.
Oh my God.
And really is, you could tell, like, here's the formula. Don't you stray one inch from this formula. I just picture on set 100 Universal executives. Don't change one thing. Here's the formula. Crazy cars, hot women, and muscle shirts.
There you go.
And all this dialogue. So my girlfriend and I went to see the movie last night, and we live tweeted each time the word family was used.
Right.
And I was like, I think Charlize Theron's headed. She said it the most.
Mm-hmm.
We counted 14.
Wow.
14 times the word family is said.
More than Dominic Toretto?
Yeah. Charlize Theron says it the most. For some reason, she keeps going, "Oh, your little family."
She's throwing it back in his face.
She is.
Yeah.
She's talking.
She's the villain.
She's the villain. She mm-hmm. thinks his family is nonsense. So that was fun to live tweet that.
Oh
and Vanessa Thomas, who is in the documentary, she goes,
"However, shame on you for using your device while watching a movie."
Well, this is what I was going to say. Because she said that. She tweets, she goes, "Graham, are you really tweeting during the movie? Say it ain't so." And both me and Lindsay, my girlfriend, responded, "We're at the food movie, and they have this back right section where it's literally these two seats all alone. And we buy the tickets way in advance, so we get those. So we have our own little premium VIP box."
Mm-hmm.
So we were tweeting back there. We weren't disrupting anybody. Okay. No one saw the screen.
Oh, okay, nice.
I'm not an ass.
Right.
I'm not the worst person ever. But we were laughing. It was so much fun because someone would say it, and then we go, "Oh," we'd pick up our phones because she was keeping track too.
Now, Jason Statham almost steals the movie.
Oh, my God. He's
he is
great.
So good in this movie. And you realize, like, over the years how they've added stars, but then, like, the stars don't drop off. They just stay with each one.
Yeah,
like,
Kurt Russell.
You forget that The Rock and Kurt Russell weren't in the first few.
No.
You know, but every time they're in one, they're going to be in the next one. So you've got The Rock, Kurt Russell, you've got Vin Diesel, Michelle Rodriguez, and you've got all of them as, like, you know, one by one, Jason Statham, and then even, I think it was Luke Evans that plays the brother, right?
Yeah.
And then Helen Mirren.
Oh, my God, Helen Mirren plays Jason Statham's mom.
Yeah. Wow. So eventually these guys are going to merge with the Expendables, like the Fast and Furious
really,
Expendables.
It really is.
It really
does feel like a car Expendables at some point. It really is.
Fast and Expendable?
Yeah, it really feels like, it's because you're adding all of these people together, and you're like, all right, well, now The Rock needs some screen time. Now Jason Statham needs some screen time, and you know, my favorite part of these movies is seeing The Rock punch Vin Diesel. So I can't say this is my favorite one because it didn't have enough of that in it. But there's a fight with a baby.
Oh, God.
This movie.
Jason Statham is holding a baby on a plane?
Yeah.
And he's
in the middle of a fight. It's like I got to give the Chris Morgan, the screenwriter, credit. Like, just because You're like, all right, well, how much crazier can they make it? No, no, here's something you haven't seen yet. And there's stuff about with driverless cars and as you can see in the trailer, there's car versus submarine.
Oh, that's being chased by the submarine on a polar ice cap or whatever.
It's great.
It's my favorite thing. And this is why
the only thing that would have made it better is if they drove through the ice hotel from one of those James Bond movies.
Oh, yeah.
It was so. Here's the thing that you make such a great point. This movie just knows what it's supposed to do because the director, F. Gary Gray, so he's done 9 features.
And one of them was The Italian Job.
Right. But he also just did Straight Outta Compton, this Oscar, nominated film. And yet, so he's a very good director, I think. And he knows, though. He's done Friday. He's done Set It Off. He's done The Negotiator. He's done A Man Apart. Wow. He's done Italian Job. Like very kind of a varied bunch of genres that he's done. So he knows. Okay, wow. This isn't a character piece.
Like, no,
this
is, it this isn't. Is right, just, it isn't.
Oh, but I love that.
It's a family piece.
It's great.
It's a family.
It's all family, man. Family. It's,
I took our 12-year-old to see it. She absolutely loved it, and. Because it was really, it's kind of that sweet spot too. Like we can really enjoy it. But if you're like a 13-year-old, you're going to like, oh my God, this is amazing.
It's fantastic. And it's so.
I wanted to see Car versus Helicopter. We haven't quite gotten there yet.
They left, they left it open. They always leave these movies open. There's always a like, is there a maybe? Mm-hmm.
Well, was there anything as good in this one as when, I forget which film, they dragged the safe through the streets?
That was,
it was in Brazil?
I had to be like 5. That was, I think, one of the turning points of the franchise when we just went, you know what? Nope. We're going to make them ridiculous and silly from now on. And that's when I think they really, like, they've always made money, these movies. But that brought the franchise to, like, a whole nother.
It brought a bunch of people like us on. Because, like you said, the first one or two, they were, I think they
it
were.
Took
like,
it a little more seriously.
They were like, this is for real, man. This, this car race is right. This is a real
that's
world.
So true.
It's serious.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's not. So then just the fact that they are now into international covert ops and espionage.
And actually shooting in Cuba.
They shot in Cuba, which was cool. Wow. And Kurt Russell.
He's so great.
He's so fan. He shows up as just this CIA guy. They literally call Mr. Nobody.
Right.
And he's always just
an assistant.
Who's a tool? And Kurt Russell's just like, look, gang, we got a covert op guy. And there's and I love the computers. How somebody just types, they just click, 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 I'm in.
Like, right. Oh, yeah, that's all it is. All you need to hack is a keyboard. And Wi-Fi.
The coolest of graphics pop up on how they break in. It's just.
And then whoever types fastest can beat the other hacker on the other side that's trying to hack, that you're trying to counter hack.
And the way they do this brilliant thing.
And apparently you could run a submarine from a keyboard as well.
Oh, which is everything's online.
These movies are cartoons. they're cartoons, and they're great, and they're fun, and they're big summer popcorn blockbustery movies. But we got one in April.
We got one in April with a $250 million budget. Right. But apparently it's close to, if it hasn't already, breaking the opening weekend set by Force Awakens, which is over $500 or $600 million for the weekend.
Even though it dropped a little bit domestically. Like, it didn't open as high domestically as some of the other ones. But overall, worldwide, it's actually higher.
Yeah.
So, you know, the rest of the world's catching on.
Thank God.
They're in on a joke.
This is our great export. Helen Mirren and Charlize Theron, the first time they ever had Oscar winners in this franchise.
And you know they're going to be the next one. It's not like whenever, that's what I love about the franchise too. When they add cast, no one goes away.
No one.
Like now everyone will be in the next one, and then let's see who will add.
It's so great because it was 2 ones ago where Jason Statham showed up at the very end. And so now he's like a cornerstone of the franchise now. So it's just like,
you know, Michelle Rodriguez, they had to bring back. I think she was, maybe she missed one or two.
Maybe.
You lose track after a while. But she's back, but she's not going anywhere now.
We're going to put this on the Patreon page.
Yes.
Your favorite Fast.
Your favorite Fast and Furious.
Which is the best one. I
was going to go Power Rangers next. I got to talk about this movie.
Okay, we've talked about it before, but you finally got to see it.
Yes, I finally got to see it with my daughter. We had family in town, so my son didn't want to just hang out with family. So my daughter and I went to see it, and it was a really weird movie. It was like, it's $100 million, and it sets up this weird, like, it didn't know what kind of movie it wanted to be. That's what made it so weird. It was You would think when you see a Power Rangers movie, it would take less than an hour and a half before they actually became Power Rangers. They literally weren't in their costumes for the first 90 minutes of the film. It made no sense. Like, I'm like, well, you know, it's a Power Rangers movie. I expect to see a Power Ranger before 90 minutes. Because the way it sets itself up, like the Breakfast Club, it's a bunch of misfit high school kids, but it gets deep into their characters. So I thought, well, that's interesting. Maybe they're going to make it a little more serious with these characters and actually give them time to develop. And then when they all come together, that's where they're going to learn teamwork and all that stuff. That did happen, but far too slowly. Far too slowly. Wow. And then everything's thrown in like piecemeal. Like, okay, well, yeah, now they have these giant Zords that they climb in, and some are shaped like dinosaurs, and then they become Voltron at the end, but it just takes so long to get there. But then you have people like Bryan Cranston in the movie, who is really hamming it up. He's like just a computer graphic face that moves around. But he's acting like he's in Breaking Bad, you know, against all these teenagers that can barely deliver a line.
But it's interesting because he did voices in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers in 93.
Yes. Yeah, he did. He did a couple monster voices. And then you also have Elizabeth Banks, who's hamming up. She looks like she's having a blast, though. I'll give her a lot of credit. But some of it's weird, they threw the first joke in the movie is about how, hey, the cow that you just milked was a bull and it only had one udder. Like, that's the first joke you're making in a Power Rangers movie, jerking off a bull? Really?
Oh, wow.
That's how you open your Power Rangers movie? So it had these weird...
It's really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It had strong material.
This really weird choices, I guess you could say, that this movie made. So I guess it's making some money. It was just a really weird thing because my kids didn't grow up watching the show, but the trailer was like, oh, my God, it's catnip for kids. It's like fighting and monsters
and giant.
Yeah, bright. Yeah, everything's bright. And then, kids becoming superheroes. And it was all those things. But it was all these weird different things kind of put together. And then they actually forgot to put the Power Rangers in it until, like, the end. So wow. It was an odd put-together movie.
How do you think
movie.
The $100 million was – I mean, do you feel like the $100 million was spent well, or do you feel like
– No. It really felt like a $40 million movie because all the effects were really just at the end.
Oh,
because it took so long for them to actually get into costume and get into the giant, you know, robot things.
I'm actually picturing it like The Breakfast Club, and then just like the last 10 minutes they get into costume.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was like. Yeah.
Instead of that horrible dance sequence in Breakfast Club, they just
Then they finally got their armor. That was it. That was kind of how it ended. So it was a really weird – a movie made a lot of weird choices, I have to say. So it's definitely worth a look just to see, like – are you sure that's what you should have done in this movie? I don't know.
It's interesting because they've had this sort of, you know, they keep calling it Sabans, and the release date was supposed to be July 26th, July of 2016, so last year, and then they moved it to March, and the theory was to give it room to grow. So I'm curious, like, has it? Was that a smart, like, would have got swallowed up last summer with all the big budget movies that come out in July? And so was this the smart play? Because right now
I think it was because there's not a crappy big budget effects driven movie out right now. So it fills that gap, whereas the summer is just wall to wall and back to back. So
because it came out a couple weeks ago, because there was 2-3 weeks before Fast 8 came out.
Yes, and this I'll tell you, part we had to see it at the second run theater, and after what 2-3 weeks, so it did. It's not. I don't think it's doing that great. So it definitely helped it by not being swallowed up by the summer. But at the same time, this is a huge franchise. You have some stars, and you've got all these cool things you could have put in this movie. I'm not sure why the choices were made that were made.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because it had a March 24th release date, and as we said, the budget was $100 million. The opening weekend it only did 40, but up until...
And that's what the budget looked like about. So
right,
I guess,
now it says, well, according to IMDb, it's done $80 million as of April 14th.
What?
But that's just U.S.
Right.
So it's probably going to...
It's probably made its money back.
It's probably going to clean up overseas.
Yeah, it definitely will make its money back. It was just one of those weird things where this is a huge franchise. And it was the opposite of what Fast and Furious did.
Right.
We're not we're not messing with this at all. We know exactly what this is. Where this is, this just went in these odd, weird, different directions.
Do you think there was some sort of like, let's maybe reboot it, but not like?
That's what it felt like. It felt like conflicting visions, all kind of getting put together in one movie. Like, no, well, let's give the characters some depth, and we'll show these characters, and maybe we'll start a franchise. And there was somebody else who said, no, just show the Zords. You know, just show the dinosaur. And then and neither side won.
Do you think it was wise for Elizabeth Banks to become fluent in the language of Eltar?
I think it was extremely wise. It really gave credence.
That's what she did.
Yes. It really gave credence to her performance and just made it feel more organic.
Well, yeah, I think the Eltarians that watch this are going to really feel like it was an authentic...
That's where it's getting, it's making its money back, is on Eltar.
Well, the Eltar, I mean, this was their movie. I mean, this celebrates their culture. Yeah. I mean, it's really fantastic.
It's really, it's where it's doing...
So this is the Hidden Figures of Eltar, right?
Right.
Right.
Yeah, so this was, I was really curious to see this movie, so curious no longer.
All right, Chris.
Now, next movie is Colossal. Now, Troy, you saw this movie, and like we said before, there are dueling reviews on the website.
Yeah.
CJ hated it. Neil was lukewarm. He didn't love it, but he didn't hate it. Troy, where do you come down on
this movie? All right, so... I'll tell you what, I wanted to leave about 10 minutes before the end of the movie. I sat through it and I went, okay, look, it's I can tell it's a well-made film. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the acting, everything, all the elements are there. But there was something I was annoyed by, which is if I'm watching a movie, like, it's, first of all, it's not an action movie. I love action movies. I'll sit through. If it's a good action movie.
It's a relationship monster movie.
Sort of.
Yeah.
But it's not really a monster movie at all. Mm-hmm. So if people are going to see a monster movie, so here's what happened. I hated this movie all the way through, and I went, God, I don't even like. I even had a pen out, and I was just like, in case I have some notes. All I did was write, "What the fuck is this about?"
Those are your notes.
I wrote that four times. And then
I thought you were going to say, in case I die while watching this movie, I want to write my will while I'm watching it.
I appreciate the effort to try to take notes.
Those were the notes.
You're a big guest who does his homework.
Yeah, I was expecting that there was going to be some profound message in this movie. Like there was going to be something, and that didn't come until the end. At the end of the movie, I liked the movie.
Oh. Interesting. It turned you around.
I almost left because I went, I already know where this is going. I know what's going to happen. This is just nonsense. And then all these elements came together. This movie is actually a little more profound than it looks on the surface. If you're going to see a monster movie, you're going to hate it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know anything about the movie. I walked in cold. I wanted to just experience the movie and see it. So I didn't know. So here's what this, and this is not a spoiler thing, but this is sort of what my take on what this movie is about. This monster that is controlled by...
Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway.
That's in the trailer.
Yeah, yes. That's in the trailer. You know that going in. So she controls this monster, and it destroys Seoul, Korea. She's an alcoholic. And I didn't put all these elements together, but this movie is actually about... the battle for your soul in the face of addiction. And I didn't get that until the very end.
Oh, okay? Interesting.
So, and also that's why it's, of all cities, the monster destroys soul because it's a battle for your soul.
Ah.
So that was that's when sort of all these elements hit me because I just go, what's it about? What's it about? I really tried so hard. And maybe I could have picked that up sooner. I don't know. And maybe not everyone even picks this up, but there's a scene. Well, let's see. So there's a lot of this battle that's happening in Seoul is for it's sort of to reclaim the life of Anne Hathaway. Uh-huh. You know,
that's interesting because like the director is Nacho Vigalondo, who's he's done like. VHS, he did Open Windows. He doesn't have some stellar, a lot of low budget stuff.
VHS was probably just a segment on it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he did the ABCs of Death. Like, it's really
hard director.
So this movie. I mean, I don't know. Again, this is just my interpretation of it. But this, so when the whole time I was watching too, I went, oh, this is just like a Twilight Zone episode. that could have been 10 minutes.
Right.
And there was a Twilight Zone where there was like these astronauts that went to a planet and they smashed these little people. Yeah. So it was very similar in the theme to that. But, you know, in the end...
So stay out of the end so you can like it.
Right. I don't know that everyone will like it. When I asked the concession bureau, I walked out, I went, hey, so what was your take on this? Did you see this movie? What was your take on it? And she's like, yeah, I liked it. She goes, I guess it's doing really well. And I went, that surprises me. I wouldn't think people would like this. She goes, no, it's. I guess it's doing well. So is that true? Is this movie doing well?
Well, I don't know. Like we.
Well, it had to be a lower budget. It's not a $100 million budget.
No, I don't think that's the case. But you know, there are some cool monster scenes if you like monsters, right. Certainly. But it's not what the movie is about.
Right.
You know,
I can't seem to find a budget online, but it apparently opening weekend it hasn't done well. It's done like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I mean, so I saw it 6 o'clock at the ArcLight yesterday, and it was... there was probably 8 to 12 people in that large auditorium.
I mean, I guess for me, the thing that looked intriguing was just that they did a decent job with the trailer, and that I was like, you know, oh, it's just some girl trying to get her life together. And, oh, there's a monster. Like, oh, this will be interesting. Like, it's a different... We've seen monster movies, and we've seen the girl whose life is chaotic and has to fix it, and they're putting them together, and I'm like, that's cool. But I was wondering, like, will that get old? There are
some weird things in this movie where I just go, why did the director choose that? Like, why in the world? Like, there's this scene where Jason Sudeikis, who plays the lead, he kind of finds a way to, in a way, set his bar on fire. He has a very nice bar. And I went, what's this about? Like, this doesn't really support, other than the alcoholism, you know, theme in it, this doesn't really support the thing. Like, there's weird shit that happens in this movie where I went, I don't know why this is in there.
And there's that, you could see why someone could hate the film.
I could absolutely see that. And by the way, if anybody's expecting this movie's going to be funny, like, I've heard, because, you know.
Yeah, it looks like it's quirky comedy and stuff. Really, yeah.
I found absolutely nothing that would anyone go, oh, ha, 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 that's fine.
Wow, there's no, so it's humorless,
absolutely not.
Too.
No, I wouldn't say humorless, but it's not comedy.
Right, okay.
It's not trying to be a comedy. That's part.
Not trying to be.
You know,
either.
That is one of these things, and sometimes studios or distributors do this, where they've got a movie that doesn't fit into any type of genre, so they cut a trailer that makes it look like it's the wrong genre. Because I could see based on what you're telling me and from the trailer that I've seen, that I could see someone going, oh, this looks like it'll be kind of a funny, quirky
thing.
And then
comedy.
You're like, and then they're going to go and they're like, this isn't funny at all. Fuck this film.
Yeah. I'm not going to stay for the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, right. I mean, I don't know that anyone else wanted to leave. I did.
Mm-hmm.
I was so
sounded
close.
Like CJ Johnson wanted to leave.
Oh, yeah. His review is hilarious. You have to read it on the site. It's
I like
CJ's funniest reviews are the ones when he hates a film.
Yeah. The last, I would just say the last line of the film, like the last 30 seconds, sort of tied it all together and made the point for me.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Because I didn't get that there was, you know, that she has this drinking problem. I feel like that, I mean, they sort of make it clear in the movie, but it's not like you watch it and you go, oh, this is about that. It's not. You don't, when you watch it, you won't say, oh, this movie's about alcoholism or addiction or whatever.
Mm.
But at the end, you might go back and go, oh, okay. Well, that's my prediction.
All right. Okay. I still kind of want to see it.
I want to see it too, especially now that I'm hearing all these differing points of view.
I know. I
want to see it for myself. So now we have an indie sponsor this show. This is really cool. I love when we get indie sponsors. This is HeresToLifeMovie.com. This is a rock doc based on the Wonder Band from the 90s called The Refreshments. Now, the name of the movie is Here's to Life, The Story of the Refreshments. Now, I want to read, as part of the ad read, I want to read the email that we got because this is kind of cool. Hey, guys, longtime listener of the podcast and just wanted to drop you a line and say thank you for all the great content over the years. Listening to your ups and downs making an independent documentary was really inspiring. That's good because sometimes we wanted to hang ourselves while doing it.
Sure.
Glad to hear that it was inspiring.
Today.
And helped, yeah. And helped me on my journey to do the same. I didn't go to film school, and most of what I know about filmmaking comes from YouTube, podcasts, and directors' commentaries. I just finished watching Earbuds, and it's great. The film is a rock doc, and you can get it at herestolifemovie.com, and you can check it out on Vimeo if you want to buy it and see it. Now, one of the things I wanted to mention is the Refreshments. They were basically a one-hit wonder. Do you remember that band?
Down it's Together. Like, yeah. They're from my hometown.
Yeah, yeah, there you
so
go.
So I used to go see them live.
Where are you okay. from?
In college, Tempe, Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Oh, awesome.
You know, yeah. Everybody knows the world is full of stupid people. That's like their big refrain mm-hmm. In their song.
And, you went to ASU.
I went to ASU.
I went to U of A.
I grew up in Phoenix. You did? You went to U of A?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I used to go. I mean, my friends went to U of A, so I was there all the time. Laughs was my home club.
Oh, dude. I started.
My first real week was there.
The first time I ever did stand-up was on campus, and then that was the club I started doing open mics at was Laughs.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's crazy, mm-hmm. man.
But this, I mean, I heard they were a great live band. I've seen
some
fantastic. Of the footage.
They were fantastic.
And it's Roger really, Klein. It's similar to the Colin Hay story where, you know, it's kind of meteoric rise mm-hmm. and then that everything just kind of fell off for them for a while. But the documentary kind of goes through all that, and it's really interesting. And we'll have a review on the site from Lord Corrett. He actually watched the movie, and he'll be reviewing it, so you can check it out. And it's a legitimate review. We don't just review for movies that sponsors pay us to do.
It's a real review.
Because one of the things Lord Corrett does is he's a reviewer up in New York. He won't review a movie that he hates. Like, if he actually watches a screener and doesn't like it, he won't do a review. Like, he doesn't like putting the negative energy into the world. However, he did it once with a movie called, I think it was Rabbit Hole, about the couple whose kid died. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the funniest movie reviews I've ever read. It's so...
yeah, Lord Corrett is sort of our music expert, music mm-hmm. film expert, so it'll
he
be curious.
He did the music chapter in the book, too. Mm-hmm.
It'll be curious to hear what he has to say. And, you guys, this is a great, you know, this is an independent doc filmmaker about a cool... It's what documentaries, what they're made to do is bring light to something you didn't maybe know of. And like if you, or if you're like Troy and you grew up and you're like, oh shit, I do want to know where this band is because I used to watch them when I was in college.
That sounds like a cool doc.
Yeah, it's directed by Taylor Morden, who contacted us, and you definitely want to check it out. And I'll give you the URL again. It's herestolifemovie.com, and you can check it out on Vimeo to buy it or rent it.
Herestolifemovie.com, guys. Rent it, you know, check it, buy it.
Do it.
Check out and support independent filmmakers.
That's available now, you're saying.
Available now, yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to some trailers.
Okay. So.
Star Wars.
The Last Jedi trailer. Mm-hmm. I fucking thought it was awesome. Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was the greatest thing.
I thought it was great. I know it's a teaser. It's one of those things where it's, I just want more. I want to see more. I know specifically I'm not going to get more because that's the point. The big trailer will hit probably the summer, around there. We'll get the longer, more extended trailer. But, you know, as a tease, of course it worked.
It was, and the opening is great. Seeing her start to, like, get her powers as she's on Luke's Jedi Island or whatever.
Yeah, it's. I think, how long are we going to see sad Mark Hamill? It's like you see him like him almost in silhouette with his head bowed. You can tell there's like he's not happy, Luke.
And then he says,
he's not going out
for
power
converters.
The
Jedi must end.
Right.
I love hearing that because it's like now we have whatever 8-9 months of. What does that mean? And he's saying all this crazy stuff, and Mark Hamill's saying crazy stuff in interviews. Like, he's just enjoying fact that nerds are flipping out.
Jedi could be plural. It could be, you know, when I say the last Jedi, it could be more than one. Mm-hmm. It could be, it could be just Luke. It could be him and his daughter. It could be just Daisy. Who knows?
What does he mean by that?
Yeah, what does he mean by that? Yeah.
And there's going to be insane. There already is insane speculation.
Sure, of course. And that will continue until the opening of the film.
Which maybe, hopefully, we'll see in Australia.
Yes. We'll see if that happens. It'll depend on Eric.
What did you think of the trailer, Troy, watching the Star Wars trailer?
It wasn't a full trailer, right?
Yeah,
it was a teaser. And I felt like it did a great job of being a teaser. Right. Yeah. Like, it made me intrigued. I really, like, I definitely want to see it. Like, I would definitely see it the first weekend.
Yeah.
You know, just a teaser. Like, all right, you got me.
And the great thing is the end of Force Awakens, we just like, oh, there's Luke. And so now... we're going to get a whole movie of old man Luke Skywalker.
Yes.
Basically being, he's now Ben Kenobi.
Because he wasn't in it a lot in the first one.
No, he was. It's the very end. He's in like 10 seconds of the movie. So now it's, this looks like it's his movie training his daughter on Jedi Island.
One thing, you know, that'd be great if it was called Jedi Island. J.I. Yeah. The one thing I'm disappointed about these new movies is I'll never get to see the scene of Luke and Han together. Because of Han dying in the in the episode, so it was always kind of when you always wanted to see that one reunion where that one shot where they're all together, you know, like getting medals like from the first movie.
Yeah.
So you won't get to see that.
And I think, you know, he's been, Mark Hamill has been talking a lot about just the emotion of losing Carrie Fisher, and
yes.
and he mm-hmm. he gave this
not going to be in the third one. Carrie Fisher, they announced.
Oh, really? Like,
yeah. Mm-mm.
So I think there's a lot of just the actual emotion of. Well, Han Solo's character being gone, but then Carrie Fisher actually being gone. And as I was saying after watching Force Awakens, why, you know, Force Awakens sort of, I felt like, had to do certain things to kind of get us back and reference the original three movies. And now we can just, this is a blank canvas for them to just go off and go into.
Now
this.
We're on board with all this stuff, so now they can do, they can do, be true.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point. That's a great point. That's what I. That's what I'm so excited about. So I look forward to talking about this movie for the next 9 months.
Yes. Next movie, Detroit, about the riots that happened in Detroit. Looks like a.
Oh my God.
Now I want to talk about this trailer for a second because it's really it's a great trailer directed by Kathryn Bigelow, The Hurt Locker.
Wow.
Now it's a very powerful trailer, and one of the things I noticed about it. Is that it incorporated some horror elements to it, like to show how terrifying that the situation actually was for the people involved. Mm-hmm. And then it actually, I believe it uses, like in one of the cards, the words terrifying or horror. And because if you watch the techniques of the way the trailer is put together, now the movie may not be shot that way, but the way the trailer is put together, it's tapping into that horror and fear of an actual horror movie to show you, you know, basically how terrible the situation is. So it was an interesting choice for the trailer editing.
Well, that's the thing I liked about it is because it's showing you what being in the middle of a riot, how it would be.
Oh,
like,
my God.
It would be terrifying.
I felt like I was in the riot.
Right.
Like,
mm-hmm.
that was a super real trailer.
Yes.
That's what makes it, you know, it's her, it's about an actual event.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just watching on HBO the LBJ docu-series, or I don't know what you call it, docudrama or whatever, where Bryan Cranston plays Lyndon Baines Johnson and Anthony Mackie, who's also in Detroit, plays Dr. King.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going off of, and it's doing that thing that they did in this trailer for Detroit, which is showing the actual footage of stuff that went down and then integrating the dramatized version with the actors and stuff like that. So I don't know, like, and Kathryn Bigelow, I love her film, so.
Oh, she's good.
I'm really anxious to see this. I just wonder if America's going to already be in a full-blown riot this summer.
Let's hope not.
Mm-hmm. We'll probably
maybe Guardians of the Galaxy can calm everybody down.
Yeah, that'll end the World War III that we're on the verge with.
So, all right, you want to go to DVDs?
Let's do it.
All right, Split. This is the M. Night Shyamalan
I never got
movie.
To see this. I was so, like...
I know. You keep saying you're like, I know there's going to be a comeback somewhere. You know. And some people were saying this was his comeback movie. I'm skeptical.
I haven't seen it. Maybe this is my chance now that it's available. I can watch it on VOD or something.
Yes, and see. Or are you getting on a plane soon?
No.
All right, then, yeah. I'll have to be VOD.
I don't have any plane trips. I might.
Yeah. Next is Sleepless. This is the the Denzel Washington movie?
This is...
Aaron?
A cop with a connection to the criminal underworld secures a nightclub in search of his kidnapped son. Yeah, this is another Denzel.
Denzaken?
Jamie Foxx is in it. Like,
it's a Taken movie.
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Now, The Founder. This is the one movie about Ray Kroc and the founder of the McDonald's founders.
I liked this. A lot of people kind of split on The Founder.
Yeah, I didn't love it. I know you liked it more than I did.
Yeah, a lot of people, I think enough people fell on your side of it, Chris, is why it didn't get a lot of... They were hoping this was going to be like Oscar.
Right.
There's going to be a bunch of nominations come. Did you see it at
No,
all?
I did not see this one.
It's worth seeing, I think, only because
I would see it.
Ray Kroc has a very interesting story, and I like Michael Keaton.
Right.
So.
Yep, and he, you know, they don't sugarcoat the horrible things that he did.
No, he was Ray Kroc was not a good guy. He was one of those old school, just cutthroat.
You know, and it's one of the trivia for that film too was that the Coen brothers were up to direct it, but then they couldn't with their schedule. I feel like it was a missed opportunity. I would have loved to have seen the Coen brothers, what they would have done with the story and how they would have directed it.
Yeah, I feel like they could have. Yeah. I think this director did a decent job with The Founder. I agree, though. The Coen brothers, I think, would have
brought it up to another level. So next movie is Punching Henry. This is our buddy Henry Phillips's sequel film. Now, you can actually see Punching the Clown on Comedy Film Nerds. We have it for sale as a download right now.
Did you see this?
Okay, so I've not seen Punching Henry. My one regret in life is that I didn't see it in the theaters.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I have seen Punching the Clown probably. It's probably the only film I've seen more times than The Big Lebowski.
Like, really? I'm serious.
That is a movie that I just like to have on. It's also a movie I like to sit down and watch because it doesn't miss a beat.
It's
like
a great movie.
There's not a single mistake in the movie of like, oh, that's not funny. Right. Everything is relevant and funny. By the way, that movie is probably, came out 8 years ago?
2009.
Mm-hmm. 2009?
I think we started carrying it a year or two later.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So it's every bit is relevant if it came out today. So they remade it and with a bigger all-star cast.
But it's a sequel. It's not.
It's
like
a sequel, but it's also a blend. Like, I guess there's some, you know, there's some similar scenes and stuff like that.
A requel,
yeah. But yeah, it's the sequel. It is. So I can't say anything about I've heard amazing stuff about Punching Henry, but Punching the Clown. Oh my God, fantastic!
The thing
movie.
I loved about Punching the Clown is
I can't wait for this.
You know, there was for me, like a reasonable expectation of, I know this is low budget. I know he kind of slapped this together. So I'll cut it. I'll give it a lot of slack.
Right.
But like you say, I was like, no, this is a solid movie.
Right.
Like this, it really has, and the way he was cast and the people that were used in it, I was like, this is really amazing. It's the same director that did Punching Henry that did Punching the Clown.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And by the way, Mike Judge became a huge fan of Henry from watching Punching the Clown and then helped produce this film.
Nice.
Oh, that's great.
I mean,
I'm sorry, go ahead. There's
J.K. Simmons in this.
Yeah. Like, yes.
It's unbelievable.
Well, that's the thing that we've all probably known Henry Phillips for a long time that I loved about him is, so when I started on the road is, the guitar acts were usually these hacky, awful.
Exactly.
They did song parodies. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just awful song parodies. And the first time I saw Henry Phillips at the Hollywood Improv, I was like, oh, this is what a guitar comic should be.
Right, one.
He's a skilled musician, and B, he's a songwriter. He's writing original funny songs.
Right.
Like he's a stand-up comic that can play the guitar.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like watching a guitar comic with integrity. Like,
right.
You now have, you know, because you're right. Guitar comics are known in the comedy world. It's like, you're gonna get huge applause breaks. You're gonna have a big closer, and there's gonna be no substance. It's gonna be all parodies that any kid could write in the seventh grade. Henry stuff is profound. It's super, super smart. And by the way, he probably would be bigger if he did dumber stuff.
Oh, of course.
Right?
Yeah, that's, really probably would be bigger.
That's a funny observation.
And that's
funny
the thing, you know, he's battled with that. And I've talked to him about that before. Like,
it's in the movie.
Yeah. If he wrote just dumb.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like the Stupid Joe thing. And that makes the point. Like Stupid Joe in Punching the Clown just makes the worst, stupidest, just replace a word in the song line and then make the parody.
Right.
Yeah.
It'd be more like him.
Yeah, right. Like Stupid Joe, and he's literally called Stupid
it's
Joe.
It's called Stupid Joe. Just sings about diarrhea and sold a million units.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's unbelievable that he's kept his integrity all this time, and he's truly Henry. And his web stuff has gotten success, like his Cooking with Henry and the You and Your Damn Coffee, all that stuff.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, God. I don't know if it was Jash or somebody big produced You and Your Fucking Coffee or something like that it's called. And those are short, like really, they look like super high-end, really big budget shorts. And they're just simple things of Henry asking for coffee. Yeah, they're on YouTube.
We'll have to email. We'll have to have him back on the show. We haven't had him on.
Oh, my God. He's unbelievable stuff. So he's one of the most talented people out there and probably one of the most underrated people. And, you know, when you talk about the music, we don't think of Guitar Comics with Integrity. And that's how it is in Australia. Like, puppeteers are respected there because they have a guy named Sammy J and Randy, it's like Jeff Dunham is what we think of as as like a ventriloquist type of thing.
Sold a million units.
Like that's our stupid Joe.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But over in Australia, they actually have Integrity ventriloquists. Like, it's hard to imagine that as an American.
Wow.
Like, you wouldn't even believe. Now, he did set list a bunch of times, and I was like, oh my God, he's amazing. And then I watched his act, and I was like, oh, this is so different. Like, it's amazing. Like, it's not like the crap that we are used to here. So, you know, there's people out there.
Oh, yeah, if you say, going on the road, you're like, oh, the ventriloquist, the guitar act, you're just like, oh,
right, right. Yes. Right.
Like some
married
couple.
Well, I know I'm not headlining.
And you're like, oh, God, this is going to be brutal.
Yeah.
But
there's some people who do it right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember when I'd MC those kind of acts, and those acts were always the biggest pains in the asses, and they would get mad at you if you said the wrong intro.
Oh, man.
Or didn't plug their CDs at the end.
Right.
You'd just be like, oh, I had this married couple, T.C. Hatter and Marianne.
Oh, I remember that.
And he was a clown, and she played the clarinet.
Yes. Oh, my God.
And it was like, and he would do this dumb clown crap. And they would always get mad at you if you swore too much.
Oh, that's
right. Opening for them. And I'd be like, I said, damn it. Like, I didn't, I wasn't swearing. And they're, and they would give you.
You could really mess up the clown vibe.
Oh, you're like in some, I remember like doing like a supper club in like northern Wisconsin. And they're like giving me.
In the 50s?
Yeah, exactly.
You did a supper club?
Northern Wisconsin still isn't, that's the time zone there, is 1953. And I was like, they were like giving me comedy advice. And I remember just being like, you're out of your minds. Like, you have a clarinet, and he's a clown that does balloon animals. Like, who the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Punching Henry.
Yeah.
Yes. Watch Punching Henry.
Check it out. And also, Punching the Clown on CFN. You could check it out.
You can buy that.
So now the site Spotlight Fan Feedback. Like I said, we were talking about, check out all of the interesting Colossal reviews on the site right now. And also, Neil reviewed Fate of the Furious. I have a feeling he's going to come down pretty similar to the way Graham and I did. And also, there's reviews of Personal Shopper and Their Finest by C.J. Johnson.
I want to mention we got a really cool tweet from Susan Long, who's been a longtime listener of the show, and she tweeted, "Thank you for my Easter present, and it's have seen them film Earbuds at L.A. Podfest. Now can't wait for the extras." And she did this really cool photo. So she got the gift pack. That was her level of
support
on the Kickstarter.
That Aaron packed up.
Yeah, I ship that. Yeah. Every time I see those photos, I go, I ship that.
I ship that. Aaron's fingers touched your product.
Yes.
And he taped it up.
Lovingly put it into a box.
You can likely clone me with what's on those boxes.
So buy some products so you can get Aaron's DNA and clone him. That's the main purpose of going to comedyfilmnerds.com. No, but Susan Long sent this really cool photo of the box it came in and then opens it up. I'm like, I retweeted that. I was like, you should get a job as some sort of marketing person because it's really, it's better than the photos
she
we have.
Put it on a pedestal with velvet.
Yeah. Yes. It's just really, it's like, wow, that should be at a museum. So thank you, Susan Long. That's our fan feedback.
And also, we are still shipping out Kickstarter rewards. Like
almost
I said, we're doing them in batches every week. We are getting very close. Your reward tier, Aaron, we're in the 100 tier right now.
Yeah, we're in the hundreds international.
And we're in the hundreds international, and then we'll be going up from there. But they will be going up quicker because there's less of you in those higher tiers.
Our fault for not doing the higher donors first.
Yes.
That was our fault.
So
thank you for your support.
Yeah, we appreciate it. And like I said, sorry for the delay. It's been, as you know, it's been quite a journey. But we were almost there, and we promise you get your rewards. You'll get them. Every once in a while, we get a stray email from someone who missed the updates and didn't get the digital one. If you're one of those people listening and like, hey, I'm due a digital reward, just email info@comedyfilmnerds.com with your Kickstarter info, and then we'll set you up.
Yes.
It's not too late.
Coming out this week.
Born in China. Now, this is a nature documentary. Disney's doing something interesting now. They have another one of their brands.
Was like another Matt Damon playing an Asian warlord.
Well, yeah, he's fighting pandas. So,
because there's far too many pandas on the planet.
So Disney Nature is basically one of their brands that they put all these nature documentaries out through, and this is one of them. And it looks good. It looks like a really good documentary.
It's basically on IMDb, it says, venturing into the wilds of China, Born in China captures intimate moments with a panda bear and her growing cub, a young golden monkey who feels displaced by his baby sister, and a mother snow leopard struggling to survive.
Yes.
This is directed by Huan Liu.
That sounds like an overly dramatic description, but yeah, it sounds like a really good nature documentary.
Well, I really put my announcer voice on when I did it because I really wanted to ramp it up a little bit.
That was very good.
Thank you. He's also done Chronicles of the Ghostly Tribe, The Last Supper,
and Fast and Furious 4. So
he's done a bunch of movies that we haven't heard of in China that probably, you know, a billion people saw.
Right.
And he doesn't care what people think of him in America.
And then the next movie is Free Fire. This movie, I saw the trailer and I'm thinking, well, this is for people who are just tired of waiting for the next Quentin Tarantino movie to come out. It's like it's like a big gunfight in a period piece.
Quippy dialogue.
I'm in.
And a bunch of guns.
I don't have your guys' I'm in-ness with this. It looks to me like...
I'm halfway. I'm like, well, it could be good, but I think I've already seen it done better with
That's what I feel
people.
Like to me. It's. I feel.
But
like,
it could be good. It could be a bad trailer. Yeah, maybe. We'll
he
see.
He did High Rise. He did the Doctor Who film, the same director.
High Rise was a missed opportunity.
Yeah. Sightseers. Are you still excited as I read this list?
Not as much. Yeah. I'm down about 10% since that
the
list.
The trailer, I just couldn't do it, and I'm sorry. Armie Hammer.
Okay, another 10%.
Yep.
So.
Sorry.
Next movie is Unforgettable. Again, now February used to be the dumping ground for we weren't sure where to put these movies that are look like terrible. This is a Katherine Heigl Hands That Rocks the Cradle feel to it, like the jilted ex-wife who's like gonna get her family back at any cost.
Yeah, the trailer for this, I was like, okay, I don't know. I guess March and April are so weird now. They become weird because it's like it's every like one weekend is a giant blockbuster and then it's a dumping ground film.
Yeah, it's like a summer February mashup now.
Yeah, it is. We just had Fast 8 and then this nonsense.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't.
So I think all studio marketing departments are in turmoil right now.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we don't know what to do.
I don't know.
That's
like,
true.
Do I go see Colossal this weekend?
Yeah.
Or do I
just, you know.
Put stock in Netflix.
Yeah. Or watch money.
They don't know what to do.
Yeah. So that's it.
That's our program.
Yeah,
that's 366.
Yep.
Lock it down. Send it in the books.
And we want to mention the Patreon again. We are almost at our first goal of 2 spoiler episodes a month. We really want to hit that goal. The first 2 goals are the most important for us as far as hitting and growing the company, because that will really not only launch more content audio wise, but it also launched the relaunch of the YouTube channel. So
yeah, I mean, we're videotaping these shows at the All Things Comedy Studio, which we love doing here, and so we're going to be releasing clips of the movies from each, like this show. You'll just see, we'll drop the discussion of Fate of the Furious clip and Power Rangers and Colossal and the Star Wars trailer. We'll release each one of those as a separate clip. And you know, earbuds, we thought more of you were going to buy it. So we'll just say that out loud. So that's...
we're still in a bit of a hole.
Yeah, so we need some more cash from that. So that's one of the reasons the Patreon's going. So if you feel like supporting the Patreon...
I will say, Graham's guilt trip has definitely worked. So here it comes again.
Yeah, guess what, kids? Dad's not going to keep doing all of these fun things for you if you guys don't do your chores. So I'll turn this podcast around. But yeah, we appreciate it. Those of you who have done the Patreon, it's awesome. You're going to get bonus content and
yep, we're
cool
almost,
extra stuff.
We're really getting close to hitting that first goal of 1,000, and that would help us out tremendously. We really need to get to that 2,000 goal to really make things go. But keep going. Like we said, $1, $2, $5, anything helps. Anything you can you can subscribe to is a bonus. If you could get to that 20, 31, great. But if you can't, so be it.
At least when we get to 1,000, we can start doing 2 spoiler eps a month.
Yes.
And we're getting into the summer blockbuster season. We want to do, want to do more spoiler eps. We like doing it. But so that's it. And then, share and all the other things you can do to support the show. Like it, subscribe, positive reviews, all that other stuff. Start going to the YouTube channel.
Yeah, and you can watch us, watch our mugs say the same things.
Yeah. Yeah, if you go to YouTube and you like and subscribe there and share those videos and stuff like that, that helps. We're just starting with 200 and some subscribers, but as a guy I started my political vigilante in January. I had 164 subscribers. Now I've got 2,800.
Right. So it does grow.
It does grow. And you see revenue build up from that.
And also, it won't just be the extra episodes. When we relaunch the YouTube channel, there will also be new and bonus content there as well.
Yeah. We want to do
more short films. There'll be all sorts of stuff.
Interviews. A lot of cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Troy Conrad, where can people find you on the internet? What do you got coming up?
So I use Instagram most in terms of social media. It's really the main thing I use. So people can find me there. It's Troy Conrads with an S at the end. And Settlers Show. We're doing a big show at Nerdmelt. We're the last Saturday of every month at Nerdmelt. So we got Saturday, April 29th with Jay Moore, Kumail Nanjiani, Andrew Santino, who's in a great show coming up on Showtime called I'm Dying Up Here.
Oh, I heard about that.
I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, I heard about that.
It's going to be a great show. And then people can check me out if people are interested in headshots. I do publicity stills, headshots, all that kind of stuff. Troy Conrad Photography.
Good. Go to Troy Conrad Photography if you guys need a photographer. And go to Setlist if you're in
LA. Do a lot of headshots?
What's that?
Do you do a lot of headshots?
I do a lot of headshots.
Yes,
okay. And I work for all the comedy festivals.
Okay.
I do a lot of stuff for CISO, Comedy Central. I do a lot of live stuff for them.
LA Podfest?
I've shot a number of years at LA Podfest. And I love doing it. So, and I get people. My thing is I get people more than just a headshot because that's only part of what you need. You need all the publicity stuff. You need social media stuff,
right.
Website,
mm-hmm.
banner stuff, all mm-hmm. that. So that's how I shoot with that in mind. So you get a lot more than just, hey, here's my headshot. Now I got to go get another thing.
A lot of headshot photographers don't do that. It's good you're doing it because you're right. You need a whole suite of photos to go across all your different social media.
Yeah. A friend of mine just said, he shot with me. He goes, I just got headshots. I don't need them. I need stuff that when I post about it, I post some new pictures, all my casting director and producer friends and all that see that and they go, oh yeah, we got to get him in. And, that's an important part of this business we're in. So, come see me about that.
Awesome.
All right.
And guys, check out Setlist if you're ever in town.
Yeah.
Please check it out. It's a blast.
And you can shoot, by the way, we have 60 episodes on YouTube. That was a Nerdist series. Nerdist produced 60 episodes. So you can watch all kinds of great people.
Oh, mm-hmm. man. Go watch the show. If you can't see it live, go watch it. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's a blast.
Thanks for having me, you guys.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show, dude.
Yeah,
we made it happen. That's our show, guys. Go and support all the stuff we've talked
about. Absolutely. And remember, on Twitter, we're at Comedy Film Nerds, and we're also on Instagram as well as Facebook.
Yep. I'm at Graham Elwood.
Go ahead.
Yeah, on Instagram and Twitter.
And I'm at Chris J. Mancini on Twitter, and I'm also on Facebook, not on Instagram.
Good for you.
Yeah. It's too much already.
It's too much. It's a lot. It's a lot to deal with. And check out my show, Political Vigilante, on YouTube. Anything else?
I just wanted to mention, too, the graphic novel, Long Ago and Far Away. It's coming along really nicely. We have the entire thing laid out, and we hired a professional letterer, Troy Petrie, who just came on board. So we're looking at, if you weren't a Kickstarter backer, we should be able to launch and be selling it, hopefully, looking at the fall.
Are those some drawings in the Dropbox folder? Did I see that?
They might be.
Yes. I was I was in there looking at the YouTube videos. I was like, ooh, this is Long Going Far Away.
Yeah.
This looks awesome. So I've seen some early sketches, guys. They look good. Mm-hmm. They look good. He's
an amazing artist.
Man. Yeah. And it's funny because his art is it's my image of what Long Ago Far Away was.
Me too, yeah.
He's taking it to another place, which is awesome.
Yeah, he's a really talented artist. Found him through Geekscape, through podcasting, Jonathan London.
Johnny London.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys, that's our show. Thank you to Aaron, our fine producer and DNA enveloper.
Yes.
Get some of his DNA, folks, and clone him because you need...
We need more help in the office.
We need more help in the office. We don't need more... I personally don't need more St. Louis Cardinal fans, but we do need more help in the office. Go Cubs.
Ow, my back.
Yeah. Yeah, now that workers we comp. Now that we fly ahead to get workers' comp, he's always injured. He's always needing some sort of help. So clone him, guys. That's our show. Go to All Things Comedy. Thanks to them for letting us use this space. Thank you, Troy Conrad. My name's Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.